Read out some. All right. So, hey everyone, it's Irene here. It is the 29th of April, year 2025. We're doing training call number. Gosh, did I get the wrong call today? We're on tra training. We're not on that training call. I'm behind myself. I think my brain is still in Europe. We're on training call. We're on healthy aggression today, aren't we? Yeah, number two or one. It's one. I think I just time traveled back. Is it two? That's what I thought. Oh my goodness. See? I just made a mistake. No one died. Who remembers what was on training call number one? It's because I didn't teach it. Who remembers the part about Nina Bull, the researcher? Pretty cool, hey? I'm going to read it because I think it's important to just remember what she found. All right. So, again, we did training call number one without me. It was a recording because I was away. That's why I got confused. I think I wasn't away, but I was. And today we're doing training call number two for healthy aggression. So there's two parts to healthy aggression. Last week we did, I call it the two-ceptions. What are the two-ceptions? This is pop quiz time. What are the two-ceptions? One is interoception and one is neuroception. Exactly. And so for healthy aggression, anger and healthy aggression called part one, I share a really fun piece of old research by a woman named Nina Bull. And I only learned about her through Peter Levine when I was learning about anger and healthy aggression through Peter's master classes, et cetera, et cetera. And he brought up some research that was a long time ago. She lived between the time of 1880 and 1968. And she believed that it was important to recognize a somatic pattern, her words, in the body, and that it was the preparation inside the body that creates the emotion, the fear, the need to fight flight, to freeze. So if I had like a whiteboard, I would draw a picture that would show we focus so much on the survival stress, the fear, the fight, the flight, the freeze, the shutdown, right? All these nervous system states. And so much often is like, oh, we got to work with our emotions. And that's true. We definitely have to work with our emotions, our feelings, our body. But we have to get better at listening to what happens before. And that's why we have to learn how to feel our joints, our organs, that interoception, that spidey sense is real. The amount of times I've talked to clients in the past or heard this in master classes where someone who has been attacked, abused, not, and this isn't always the case, or in a really bad accident, like a car accident or something bad happens. Often, if people are really honest, they'll go back and they'll be like, I had a sense something wasn't right. Or that day, I felt like I should have done this, but I did that, and then this happened. Now, this isn't the case for infant trauma, of course, in utero trauma, childhood trauma. But as adults, when we have a little bit more of that cognition on board, we've got some pretty strong spidey senses that say something's not right. And it's so important. This comes back to following impulse. So I really love what she found was that it was the preparation in the nervous system. It wasn't the actual fight or fleeing or freezing, it was what was happening right before. Whether that's neurochemical, biochemical, or maybe it's more quantum and we can't measure it, in my opinion, it doesn't matter. The key is that you're getting better at listening to the deeper sense inside of you. Some might actually call that spirit or soul. I got the message from some higher element that said, don't do this or do that. I still think we interpret all of that through our body, right? We have to feel it through our body. So that was one of my favorite parts of Healthy Aggression Part One, back on training call number four. And this is why it's so important for us to work with our movement. And as you do more of the Feldenkrais lessons, you'll start to notice that a part of what I teach is how can you sense what you might do before you do it? Yeah. I'm gonna mention, what would it be like to roll your pelvis before you even try that? Just does the thought of it make you clench your breath or hold your breath? Or what is it like to feel how you might roll a little bit to the right or the left before you even do it? Can you sense that preparation in the body that might start to take you that way? And even if I was to, we do a little experiment right now. We've got about 112 people on the call live. So some of you are sitting, some of you might be standing, but I think most of you are sitting. So for those that are sitting and you're sitting somewhere where you could stand up, just start to think about standing up. Just think about it. Just think about it. And even with that thinking, do you start to feel something activate in your physiology? Yeah, I see some nods. Can you sense if one foot is more ready to grip into the ground? I see a few people go, yeah. And that's cool, right? We need to have preferences, right? So even just that idea, cognitively, you feel that prep. And so I might then say, well, now because we're all humans, I can say, feel if there was a preference right or left. To use the left or the right foot. And I see some people go, yep. So now, how can you shift the concept of the movement, and how would you prepare yourself to stand up with both feet being a little more even? So feel how you might need to shift your body weight, right? And that's. Can even sense that myself. And then feel, okay, now I've got maybe a little bit more anchoring, a little bit more under me. And then I might say, and then see what it's like to stand up. And you don't have to, but you could start the initiations of that. But you see, just what did that take? Less than a minute? That little thought experiment, if you even do that with yourself on a daily basis, a couple times when you're sitting at your desk working at your computer, or you're sitting at your table having, a sandwich or something like that, reading a book, this ability to pause and just tune in somatically to those preferences, in my opinion, that will give you more than any high-level meditation might at this point in your journey. Because you're working with your nervous system, your peripheral nervous system. You might start to notice, oh, my breath gets held when I even think about that. Okay, I'm going to breathe. I'm going to shift. I'm going to feel my pelvis now. I might notice, oh, wow, I'm actually clenching my hand now that I'm paying attention to my feet. So, this is the arc, if you will, of how you start to teach yourself. To bring in those preparations for action, right? It's great to listen to me on the neurosensory exercises, and you will continue to do that, especially those who are new this round. You want to go and you want to do the lessons, but you're at a point now where you can start to integrate some of these concepts into your daily life without me. And that's what we want. We want you to be able to do this without me. Right. And you use your own mind, your own thinking, and your own observation of self in relationship to the environment. So the moment you do that, you connect to the environment. It's real simple. Maybe you orient a little bit. What happens when you're on a computer often? Your head down. How can you bring your eyes up, see around you, that kind of thing. All right. So let's get into anger and healthy aggression part two. So the first page here is some review. A lot of you have maybe seen some of these articles of mine where I call them anger as medicine. They're additional resources. I wrote the original anger as medicine article long time ago. It was sparked when I saw we were teaching a workshop somewhere. Elia and I actually, and it was a lunch break, and there was this little girl, poor little thing. She was probably three. She was not happy. She was upset about something, and her dad, because the area we were in was a university, so could sort of sense that he was maybe a grad student or he was the husband of a grad student. Who knows? He was younger, and he just kept ignoring her, and she was just reaching up, wanting to be picked up, wanting to be held, and he just was pacing away from her, just ignoring this poor little girl in absolute distress. And then it got to the point where she was on the ground, hitting it, screaming, and I'm like, my goodness. And then finally he came to her. But something in that moment made me write this article, Anger is Medicine, because we can't tell what's going to happen to that little girl, but let's just say hypothetically, she becomes an adult. Hopefully she does. And she all of a sudden realizes, wow, I have this intense anger whenever I'm in relationship, but I don't know why. And there's a lot there, but if our little people aren't getting their needs met, not getting picked up when they need connection, they're going to store the whatever it was. Maybe she was hungry. Maybe she had to go to the bathroom. Maybe she wanted to go play. We were in a green space. Maybe she wanted to play with something and he wasn't letting her. She was pissed, but that anger went uncontrolled and then she had to deal with it on her own. And then she collapsed, on the ground. And so this ability for us to start to understand our history with anger, I think, is really important. For some of us, we never saw it growing up because we might have had a very frozen household, a very emotionally frozen household. Or maybe we had the opposite. We had a very violent household. And both are equally troublesome because one, we are afraid of anger because we saw it only be violent. Or the other, we don't have any concept that we can get energy up in our system and set boundaries because it just never occurred. A lot of houses that are very cold and very frozen also have a lot of contempt, a lot of silent stares that are angry, but silent. And that can just be as toxic and as poisonous to children because they feel something's not right. As Kathy Kane, one of my mentors, had said long time ago, she said, children will go bananas if adults hate each other, but they don't say it. So they'll feel that underlying contempt, and then they will act out the energy that they're feeling in usually the parents. And of course, that transfers to all sorts of other things, but that's just a little history of where the anger as medicine concept came up because it's very, very healing when we can work with anger in a healthy way. Understand that it's there to provide boundary, to provide safety, to provide the elements of this isn't okay, right? This isn't okay. So let's get into this. I'm gonna have a little water here. Page one. So, why working with the emotion anger and developing healthy, that's the first word there, healthy aggression. Why is working with the emotion anger and developing healthy aggression one of the toughest things to unwrap? So, I'm posing this question to you. So I just kind of answered it actually before reading this out. It's because we either see it in a violent way or we don't see it at all. Right. And you throw in all of our cultures and all of our different rules that so many of us were brought up in. And then you throw a mom and a dad or a couple, raising a kid who have totally different views of anger, not necessarily because one is bad or good. Just let's imagine one parent got the stone cold sober, no one has any emotion. And then the other partner is all they saw was violence and aggression. Those two have a lot to work out in order to find healthy regulation and connection. So my personal sense is we're trying to teach and learn something. So back to the handout that we rarely see modeled in a positive, powerful way. Powerful way. So I'm going to read some quotes that I just absolutely love. Of course, if you've got your handout in front of you, you've already seen this. But this is a paragraph on expression and containment. So expression and containment versus explosion and violence. There's a difference, right? And someone just said in the chat, we're taught that anger is bad. So I would, add more text nuance to that. Violence is bad, right? Outbursts that are uncontrolled, not good, bad. Crime, bad. But expressing our boundaries and our healthy aggression, very important, very good, right? Granted, it's directed in the right way. So this is a quote from a book called The Essential Edgar Cayce. Some of I've been studying his work kind of on a personal level for many, many, many years. And this is he's long passed, but this is a gentleman who writes a lot about Cayce's work, Mark Thurston. So he says, anger is an emotion directly related to saying no. Of course, he isn't saying we need to run around blowing our stacks every day, but he did emphasize the need to express anger the right way, in the right way. And then this is Cayce's quote. He's a very religious Christian man. He says, be angry, but sin not. I think we all know what that means. Be angry, but sin not. For he that never is angry is worth little. I know that's a bit of a punch, right? But he's being pretty direct. That's his way of saying we have to let our energy out. Can't hold it in, right? But then, again, this is Thurston writing in his book. Cayce adds how important it is to have a container for that anger. And then Cayce says, but he that is angry and controlleth it not is worthless. So we have to control it. We still have to express it, but we don't want to, like, let's say I got pissed off at something and I just destroy my office. That's not very smart, right? We see that in movies all the time. Someone gets pissed off and they clear their desk off and break a chair and all the things. It's so silly. But that happens. That might happen, right? But it's not very useful. He then goes on to say, note here that the control does not mean suppression. Note that control does not mean suppression, but proper direction. So we're directing it out. It's a crucial distinction, Thurston writes. And we know this when it comes to the topics of, say, shame, healthy shame, toxic shame. We don't want anger to turn back towards us, which a lot of children, that happens. We think back to that little girl, right? She's not sure, why are my needs not being met? I'm so angry, right? And then we all see kids who start to harm themselves because they don't know what to do, right? So it goes back towards them. And of course, there's a lot more going on with kids these days, but it's one of the things that really we want to make sure that we're not, for the sake of all of us here, that if we are putting anger towards us, that ain't so healthy. We want to get it out in a healthy way. So then in the nervous system, next line down, in the nervous system in SE, somatic experiencing worlds, Peter Levine explains titration. So I'm going to bring titration in as, because it's important in relationship to anger. Okay, we don't want to express a world's worth of anger in 1 week. That's too much. We have to titrate it out. So Peter writes, we use titration to create increasing stability, resilience, and organization. Titration is about carefully touching into the smallest drop, little drop of survival-based arousal and other difficult sensations to prevent re-traumatization. I, in this case, Peter, use the term titration to denote the gradual, stepwise process of trauma renegotiation. So, if we use that example of a little girl who probably has some anger, in this world where she's now an adult wanting to work on why am I in this way? Why am I exploding anger when I found this person I want to connect with? Maybe she finds a partner. It isn't enough to just go, okay, let's get angry at your dad who never connected with you when you needed something. Let's just scream and hit and take that baseball bat, and hit the pillow, which happens in so many cathartic practices. We're gonna just slowly sense, how do you notice that in your body? Is there a tightness? Is there a heat? And then, of course, all of you know. If you were working with this person, in that world, what could you, was there a resource? This is where you bring resources in, grounding, sensing in the labs of VU and VUA. Let's just do a little sound to push some VU, some intensity out, just in a little bit, right? This is where tense and relax lessons that some of you have already gotten into, some of you haven't. Come in. I'm going to feel that tension and then I'm going to consciously let it go. Right? Or I'm going to connect and orient to something outside of me because what I'm feeling inside is just too much. Right? Oh my goodness, I'm heating up right now. Right? I'm so warm. I better cool off a little bit because I can feel that energy, that sympathetic, adrenalized energy really getting to me and I need to shift out of it. So, page two. Go to page two. Yeah, someone said, I hurt my shoulders following that advice of hitting pillows. Exactly. So here's the thing, and this was covered in the first call on anger and healthy aggression. If you can remember on the final page, I talked about the need to connect the movement with internal experience and feeling. We might know in our mind, I just have to, I know I have a lot of fight in me. I need to just go punch a bag, right? And there's nothing wrong with boxing for a sport. It's actually a really good exercise, creates a lot of good coordination and skill and breath work. But if we know we have to explode and get this fight response, but it's not connected to that internal roar, that visceral feeling, that I want to rip that person's head off, or oh, I need to slam on the brakes so I don't get into that accident, or whatever. If we don't connect the movement with that internal burgeoning, bubbling of sensation, emotion, that stored nervous system, incomplete procedural memory, we do run the risk of hurting ourselves because the body isn't ready to let out that big. In this case, anger response, that need to complete the fight response. In all my years doing this for myself and supporting others and moving out anger, healthy aggression, these sorts of things, even toxic shame elements, I've never seen someone get hurt when their body goes into some kind of shaking, punching, what we could say a healthy, contained rage response. Because it wants to come out, but it's coming out because it's organically coming out from them. It's not me coaching them through it. I hope you see that distinction. So this is where we run the risk again of doing just the physical expression of the anger movements is not enough. It has to connect to the feeling, the gut sense. Oh, like I got to get that out, right? So titration and practice. When we're practicing, experimenting, and living, that's the word living, our lives, of course, We want to navigate our experiences so that sensations of the body and activations, that's the next word, activations. That could be arousal, stimuli, stress. So anything that activates our system, good or bad. Settle on a case-by-case basis. In other words, next line down, don't flood the system. Flood is the word. Don't flood the system. When starting out, next line down, when starting out, when our capacity is smaller, that's the word, capacity is smaller. We want to aim to not let out too much energy all at once. That's the next line. Energy all at once. We want to titrate our experiences. That's the word, titrate and experiments as much as we can. As alluring as it might be to try to get it all out because it feels so good in the moment. If I have any message to convey to the world, it is how important it is to do smaller bits of work, especially at the beginning, even though it might seem like nothing is happening. Something is happening. When you're conscious of it, you're paying attention to it, you're connected to it. Just like when you have a newborn baby, doesn't look like much is happening for a while, right? But you do what you do, same thing every day, and then all of a sudden they start speaking. Like, how did that happen? Right? So again, that's a very more obvious example. Like, well, of course they're going to start speaking. That's what humans are supposed to do, right? So I might say, in the case of working with our old stored traumatic stresses, stored anger, think of it in the same way. Your body wants to let this stuff go. And our birthright is to have healthy aggression and boundaries and nose and move forward in direction that we want to. But we have to realize we've had so many years, for some of us, decades, for some of us, more than 60, 70 years. And then you add in the transgenerational piece, it's like, my goodness, there's so much that we're working with right now. And don't think about it too much, because then it can be overwhelming. But it's like, yeah, there's a reason why for these first year, a couple years, you want to go a little slower. Because eventually, once that foundation is solid, there will come a time, and we know this from talking to alumni and hearing alumni, that, oh my goodness, I just had a natural organic anger expression. And it came out so effortlessly and so easy. And now my shoulders feel more relaxed. I feel more easy. My digestion shifted, et cetera, et cetera. I can sleep better. But it takes some time sometimes to get up for that to come up. So someone just said, I'm getting very irritable. Is this anger wanting to pop up? If you're getting irritable right now, of course, I'm talking about anger and irritation. So if for anyone here feeling like, oh, I just want to take my computer and just smash it, don't do that. But see if you have to get up and move a little bit. Like, maybe you've got to stand up and stomp around a little bit. Maybe your arms need to swing. So just listen, right? See what it is. Follow that impulse. Because just hearing about this stuff can also start to illuminate stuff that's sitting in the cells, right? This is where that field, that quantum field, it's a thing, right? You hear about something and it pops up, it triggers something in your own cells, and your cells go, hey, I think that's something I need to do, or that sounds familiar. All right, let's go to the next piece here. So I have written here, babies have this innate capacity in them. So babies have this innate capacity in them. In this, I mean this, the ability to titrate and do small bits at a time. So one thing that you will see sometimes with an infant is they might start to fuss if, say, you're hanging out with them, you're holding them. They might start to fuss. They might start to look away. They might start to not engage with you anymore when they've had enough stimulus. Enough is the word. So listening to that in them and acknowledging that you're having, let's just make it like the little games that we might play with little infants and even toddlers. And then the moment they're like, I don't want to do this, that's our cue as an adult to stop doing it. If we force them to keep doing it, that's when they start to show their colors, right? And it's a constant push and pull, obviously, when they get a little older and they get a little bit more of their autonomy and they get a little bit more of their healthy aggression on board. It's a little harder to contain them in the way that you want. That what you want to do that day. And it's like, nope, we're not doing that today. I want to do this, right? So it's a bit of a push-pull with little humans. Next bullet point, another hallmark of attunement. So attunement, that's the word there. Another hallmark of attunement is being able to recognize this as the caregiver, of course, and support their natural rhythm of approach and avoidance. So I'm coming towards you, and now I need to come away. So, similar to that example at the beginning, when I talked about that little girl that I saw, who is this with Papa? She's upset and she's approaching, she wants connection. And obviously, that's not being met. And then, of course, the other is, oh, I don't like that, right? This rhythm of approach and avoidance is very primal. It's very primal. Kids know when they like someone or if they don't like someone. I mean, we just had, for those of you that celebrate Easter, every now and again, when I go on social media and look at some funny pictures of things, and of course, this year, the classic carousel photos of kids in the 80s and 70s sitting on Easter Bunny's lap, absolutely pissed off, crying, red in the face, trying to get away from Easter Bunny. And we see similar, of course, pictures when kids are put on Santa's lap for Christmas photos. Some kids love it, but I think often they don't because it makes sense. It's a stranger. Right. So you're gonna take this little child who doesn't want to go there, and you're gonna pop them on this lap of this foreign person with a costume on that you can't connect to. Kind of makes sense that a lot of these kids start screaming and crying. Right. So again, just a funny way that we do things in some of our cultures for the sake of getting that photo to send to family members. It's just weird, right? So that's a great example of that kid doesn't want to go sit on Santa's lap. Don't make him, right? It's having a picture by the Christmas tree with family who they know is probably a better thing to do, for example. So again, that's just a very obvious visual of approach and avoidance. And kids are curious. Oh, they look at something, they go towards it. What is that? Seth's great story of his son when his son was a toddler. He was a very curious kid and he was allowed to roam through the jungles of Hawaii. And him and the mother at the time let him do whatever he wanted within reason, of course. They were around. And the first food that his son ate was a hot pepper that was on a plant. And he just had the, he's like, oh, what's that? He picked it and ate it. And he was fine, but they heard this huge yelp like this, ah, and of course he was okay. But that curiosity, ooh, I'm going to approach that fruit. I'm going to pick it off and put it in my mouth, right? That's a natural thing that humans do. So just wanted to share some of those interesting stories. Number two, still on page number two. So our birthright. So this still is in regards to kind of kids and infants. So healthy aggression and the energy of the emotion, anger, that final little section there. The classic, that's mine. So that's the word there. That's mine. Like, I want it. give that to me, right? As the toddler grabs a toy from, say, their brother. And then we, of course, try to tell them, please share. And that probably doesn't always go over very well because it's this element of, I want autonomy. I want to see that thing. I want it too. And then there's also a movement with it, right? It's that strength. It's that healthy aggression. It's that I want to see what's going on. These are all very natural impulses. The baby that tugs on the mom's hair, while say she's breastfeeding. I've heard my men friends who have kids, they'll get their beards torn, pulled on, their chest hair torn out. But the punching, the scratching, again, it's not because that little one is trying to be, as Peter would say, a little monster. They're just feeling their power, right? They're feeling their strength. Tiny punches, fists on the face, grabbing the dog's tail and pulling really hard, like, why wouldn't you pull on that tail? It's like a rope, it's like, let's pull on this thing, let's do these things. So these are all examples of ways in which we find our healthy aggression, our power, our sympathetic energy when we're little. And this is why it's so important to play with children and babies, right? They need to have energy be expressed and they need to be met in that energy, just like animals, right? Animals like to rough and tumble when they're kittens and puppies. That's what they do. Go to page three. Before we get into this, I've shared this story many times, so apologies for those of you who have heard this more than once or five times. Ages ago, an acquaintance had a newborn, and the newborn was, I believe she was hitting my friend's face, and she wasn't so sure what to do with that. She was a new mom. I'm not really tuned into any of this nervous system work, which is fine. And she looked up on Google what to do if your infant is hitting you or scratching you. I think it was hitting you. And she said that Google spat back, just hit the baby back. Or she found some site that said, do that to them, and that makes them stop. So punish them with pain. And she, was smart enough to be like, yeah, not doing that. So she asked me, and I said, well, the next time he starts to pull, or I think he was punching, just take his little hands in a friendly but firm way and have a little game. Like, play a little tug of war. Like, acknowledge his strength of, wow, you're really got some strength in you. Like, let's just play a game. And he did that, probably had a really good time with mom, connecting to this energy that he's feeling. And he never hit her again. And it was a simple little connection point that will probably change the trajectory of that little guy's life, because he was met by his mama, and mama acknowledged his power to be strong and be strong in connection. In this case, obviously, it was a female figure. So that's wonderful for future relationship. Now, sometimes people will say on the internet again, and you see things where people say, well, don't punch them, but pinch them. Give them a little pinch on their skin so they get a little bit of a shock. And again, still not good, because you're now creating pain. You're creating a threat. Connection. Again, this comes back to Stephen Porges' polyvagal theory. We want to connect, right? Now, of course, if, this is with an infant, someone's beating you up, and you have the strength to fight back, fight. I think, again, this is, if you can, this is why people, get into real fights. Now, I'm not saying we should do this. And then in case, I don't have the strength to fight, what do? We might flee. If we can't flee, we can't fight, we freeze. And then if it becomes, very hard to feel what's going on, we go into shutdown. So those survival responses are there for a reason. But when we're working with our old stored angers and aggressions that never got to come up as adults, and again, this goes back to Edgar Cayce's paragraph, We have to find ways to move this stuff out in a contained, safe way. It's not enough to just think about fighting back. It's not enough to journal this out. It has to come out with the response of, oh, I gotta run from the scene, or oh, I gotta punch, or oh, I gotta strangle, or oh, I gotta scratch. And this is where there's an article that eventually you'll read. It's Seth wrote an article on the importance of annihilation energy, this ability to, and it'll be put if it's not already in the additional resources or under the labs on healthy aggression and anger. But you get to a point where you have to sometimes visualize annihilating the perpetrator or perpetrators, right? And this ties in with ancestral trauma, your own personal trauma, even maybe your birth trauma, the stuff that didn't get to happen that you should have had happen when you were a little one. And that can go towards many different kinds of people who put you through some form of harm. This doesn't mean we play victim. It just means we get the survival energy out that needs to come out and, have the knowledge that, yeah, this person didn't know what they were doing. Really sucks, but we have to get this stuff out. So, wanted to share that story about that friend of mine and her little one because it still is such a prominent. I still remember the coffee shop I was in when she asked me that question. It's so seared in my mind. All right. So, page number three. So, here are some examples of the beginning energies of healthy aggression. And life force being felt and expressed. So, this comes back to kind of what I was just talking about with my girlfriend and this baby around the mom. So, in her case, she didn't know what to do, but then she asked for help. Like, she actually was a smart cookie. She's like, I gotta find out why this is happening, right? So, kudos for that. But let's just say, the mom doesn't know how to meet, that's the word, meet that energy in a caring and inviting, attuned and encouraging way. The baby won't feel met and she'll sense unsafety. So the baby will sense something's not right. They're not going to think it. This comes back to neuroception. Yeah, that word neuroception. Now, remember too, for those of us, maybe we were the mom that didn't know what to do with that healthy aggression, or maybe, we just know that that didn't happen for us. This is where I say my kind of blanket statement, that it's nobody's fault and it's everyone's fault. I say that often. It's no one's fault and it's everyone's fault, meaning we're all in this together. Culturally, we just didn't know. And now we have to figure it out and fix it and heal it and move forward. But often that meeting of aggression doesn't occur because mom herself doesn't have the capacity for her own healthy aggression in the world around her. So when little baby tugs on the hair or punches or scratches, she sees it, mother sees it as, I'm being very, very hypothetical, very general here. That kid is pissed at me. That kid is trying to hurt me, right? Something I've done something wrong. And the thing is that's just biology, right? But if mom isn't in her own physical vigor and understands how animals in the wild play, if she hasn't, so many young mothers are raising kids in isolation where they've never even held a baby. And the first baby they hold in their life is their own baby. That's a big issue in our current culture, right? We don't know that this is what babies do. We don't know that they have strength and they also need connection, right? So there's sort of this interesting element right now where we're trying to reteach this importance of us as humans gaining up our energy, our healthy energy, our capacity. For some of you, you've already passed your child rearing years. For some of you, you might still want to have kids. This is so important to understand this need to build your own healthy aggression so you can meet that little biological human that's going to need all this energy, right? To play and all these things. So the next line down. Without consistent safety, so this goes back to this hypothetical of baby not being met, right? Without consistent safety, you get the slow decline, that's the word, decline of life force energy expression. So it's a shutdown that starts to occur. It's like no one's here to play with me. I have this energy, but I don't know what to do with it because it's like it's going out into the ether and it's not coming back, right? This aligns also with the concept of babies being left to cry it out, to cry themselves to sleep. This old notion that if you just let a child cry and cry, they will self-soothe, and they won't. They don't have the capacity, they don't have the self-regulation to self-soothe. They build self-regulation through that connection when they are under distress. We've already talked about that at length in other calls and in the biology of stress training videos, right? So again, when there's this, I need to play, I need to pull on your hair, if that's not met, that little one is going to sort of fizzle out because it's like, well, I'm not being met, so what's the point? And we don't want that, right? We don't want that. So the biological message, next line down. My bio the biolog biological message is that of no acceptance. So it's like we're not being accepted by our primary caregiver. That's a big hit to the system, right? Big hit to the system. And when a person, next line down in brackets there, smaller print, and when a person doesn't accept you, especially your primary caregiver, you don't accept yourself. This is the start of how we self-doubt and how we don't understand what's like, why am I here? What's the point? Right? And for many of you, this carries on into adult life, and we're working on that to find that life force, that connection again to, if one might want to say, soul, to being here, to the world, the earth, to nature, to ourselves, to others. It's why relationships can be difficult. Our primary relationships was that of not acceptance and of conditional love. We need to crack that cookie. We need to, move out of that to be able to find good relationship. Or if we have relationship, work with our current relationships to build that up better. Next line. So the energy, that energy of non-acceptance turns inwards. That's the word, inwards. Inwards. And I already mentioned that a little bit. We don't want anger to go towards ourselves. We want it to go out of us. And just to make a quick connection before I get on to the next part of that sentence, this is the tie-in with what Dr. Gabor Mate really got put on the map for, was his book, When the Body Says No. When you read that book, the biggest portion of it is the suppression of anger that his patients had. Patients that should not be getting sick at such young ages with cancers and autoimmune and neurodegenerative conditions like ALS and MS, lupus, all these really debilitating conditions, they were the good people. They were the people that did everything for everyone, always with a smile on their face. I'm gonna do all these things. I'm so happy. I'm acting now, guys, right? Yeah, of course I'll do that. Of course I'll pick up your kids. Of course I'll bake that cake for the fair. Of course I'll clean this house to make it look perfect and kill myself in the process and do it with a broken ankle and a headache and a fever and all these things, but I'm going to get it done, God damn it, so everything looks like it should be on a sitcom. Right. So this is the generation that, of course, we still have to take care of ourselves and our families, but that going too far to make it look good on the outside absolutely robs us of our authenticity and our healthy aggression. And so this is this concept of self-hate. So again, this final bullet point, number four, that energy of non-acceptance turns inwards to low self-esteem, self-hate, and shame. And I have more on that soon. We're not going to get into all of the elements of toxic shame, healthy shame today. We will. Great movie, kind of depressing movie, but it's a very good piece of art, I think. Hollywood movie with Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet. Revolutionary Road. Tragic movie, a spoiler alert. There's a spoiler alert there. But they do, a wonderful portrayal of, I think it was the 1950s, kind of post-World War II, and that whole perfection look of the bankers of New York and the perfect white picket fence. And of course, all of the, I just got shivers through my body, all the women of that era who were taking a lot of drugs, a lot of Prozac, drinking a lot of alcohol, smoking a lot of cigarettes, and they were just coping. And making everything looking perfect, right? So that element of keeping it all together. And then, of course, what happens in the movie is a lot of fighting between those two as a couple. So there's an example of unhealthy aggression and violence coming out. Good movie. I've been meaning to rewatch it because it was so perfect to display nervous system dysregulation, at least in the West. And America 1950s-ish. So if you think about that, if those couples as a proxy had kiddos, babies, those babies, which many of you might be those babies, right? Learned a very strange way of how things were in those households. So, I mean, it's good that we know that that's not the best way to do things. And now we're kind of finding. Where is that middle ground? Because we also don't want to swing so far where there isn't containment and rules and this is there is things that we shouldn't do, right? This is the teaching of right and wrong that kids have to get. That comes in with the healthy shame piece that we'll get into later. All right, so it's taken a while to get page through page number three. So therefore, comma, to reaccess the true self. That's the word self. One must tap into their healthy aggression and wake up the life force energy that was shut down due to basic survival. That's the word survival responses so long ago. Right? So we want to reaccess this true self, this authentic biological self. To do this, we must tap into our healthy aggression and wake up the life force energy that was shut down due to basic survival responses so long ago. In theory, this is simple. I say that with a smile. In theory, this is simple. But in practice, again, our lives, our relationships, if we work at a job because we have to make ends meet and make money, we might not like everything that happens in our office. Let's just use that example. So that's where one might decide this isn't where I'm going to express my healthy aggression because I actually need this job and I can't get fired. Right. Now, of course, if it's a toxic environment, then you got to look at a different level. Maybe this isn't the best place for me to stay. Maybe eventually I've got to find a way to come out of this position, find something more meaningful. And I have so many stories from you and your alumni, peers where you've moved slowly from a situation of, say, a toxic work environment to a healthy work environment. These stories are true. They happen when you get more regulated, but you also have to be diligent at not, as Edgar Cayce says, blow your stacks. So again, you got to be tempered. It's kind of a strange word, right? Tempered in not doing too much expression of healthy aggression in social situations where you might kind of get into trouble. Unless, of course, you're wanting to get into trouble so that you have a reason to leave, right? So there's these elements where you got to kind of play poker in a way with yourself and go, this isn't the place for me to start telling this person what I think, even though I have to get it off my chest. But this situation, I think I can do a little bit of a risk and express a little bit. And because I couldn't get this out here, I'm going to spend some time tonight doing some healthy aggression work at home. I'm going to do some resourcing. I'm going to do some vooing, some eyeing, some dancing, something to get that energy out. Right. So this is where you guys have to use your human brain to, in many ways, decide democratically in your own system, good for here, not for here. Right. So that takes some time to figure out, but over time you get a little, it gets easier knowing when and when not to express some of these big energies. Some of you might know that if you try to express these big energies in certain situations right now, it will probably maybe cause more trauma. And you don't want to do that, right? You don't want to poke the bear, as some might say, use that saying. So I say that in service of just ensuring you stay safe, right? Because you don't want to bring more unsafety into your circles, into your world when you are trying to build more safety. And that might mean you just have to keep your mouth shut when you see your in-laws doing something you don't like, for example, right? Or you don't like what your neighbor's doing, let him do that thing or her do that thing, right? But again, within reason. If there's true abuse, then you need to do something about it. And this is where you've got to have discernment. So the last three bullet points here. So this is about ways that we do tap into healthy aggression in these little drop by drop, tiny piece by piece titrated ways. So the lessons of making sound, that's the first word. Sound. So that voo, gets the ah, the jaw open, which is very important. So these lessons of making sound via the voo, is to help spark up life force. That's the two words there. Energy in small, titrated pieces. Because not only is it coming through the throat and the mouth, and you're opening up the jaw, when you get that voo vibration, if you want, you can try it with me now. It's like a foghorn voo. You gotta resonate the chambers of the gut. So those diaphragms start to open up. The belly drops, the pelvic bowl opens. You're not going to find a opera singer or a baritone singer or anyone who can sing really well with tight abdominals and tight thoracic. Can't just sing through the throat. It comes woo, from the guts, right? Even something as simple as, and I don't have it here on the sheet, but like that deep sigh. Like we all know kind of what that is, that, and feel free to do that with me. I know I can't hear you, but it's like that big inhale and then it's like just kind of like be a bit dramatic, Oh gosh. Like that allows a little bit of a relax. I think even the esteemed podcaster scientist Andrew Huberman talks about, I forget what he calls it, the intentional sigh, right? And how that can help. He will say reset the nervous system, but we know that doesn't happen. It is a letting down of tension that's in the system, which can allow the system to get a little bit more space. Thank you, the physiological sigh. Okay, next line. So these sounds, voo, voo, ah, help to mobilize. That's the word, mobilize or move is another word for mobilize. That deep, visceral, biological, cellular knowing that you, that I matter, and that you deserve to be alive. That's the word, alive. I always like to go back to animals. You have a usually dogs are more like this, but they make little sounds. Wolves are known for it, huskies, or that, they'll have those big sighs that come from the belly when they're relaxing. It's not an accident that puppies and kittens yap and make sound when they're moving around. They're usually not totally mute. And so this ability for us to remember, we can make sound, and it doesn't have to just be when we speak, right? And this is where, for some of us, I think many of us like to sing, maybe in the shower, maybe when we're driving, we belt out song because it's a way to express and it's safe. That's why I think so many people love their cars. It's like a safe place to be, listen to whatever you want to listen to, and just chill out, even though you're driving, right? So this ability to, again, mobilize sound, get that vibration through is very important. Final bullet point there. This is very different from acting. Acting out, acting is the word, or watching, say, a movie that might spark or produce aggressive reactions or feelings of adrenaline. Now, I'm not against a fun action movie. Like, I like those movies. They're fun to me, spy movies. But you also don't want to be going towards that form of entertainment because it's helping you get out of freeze, for example. For entertainment, for fun, for, amusement, wonderful. But this ability to find that visceral activation, that healthy aggression internally is what we want. It's what we want. Page four. So the first line there says cathartic practices. We already just kind of covered this a little while ago, but it bears repeating. Cathartic practices tend to tap into this kind of only outward expression, right? It's all on the outside. It's all about just action and movement. It isn't about deep connection to the visceral self and then moving that out. So that bullet point here, we want to connect to our internal sensation, our emotions, and then move that energy and action out. Out is the final word. And so this is what I reviewed or did in part healthy aggression and anger training called part one. The final page, it's about the connection with that internal visceral along with the movement. They have to go together. What can often happen when we get some of this anger, healthy aggression out, often under that can be a deep, deep grief, sadness. And so they go kind of both ways. Sometimes it's like kind of an oversimplification, but I think it bears mentioning here for our sakes, right? Some people will say, oh, that person always gets angry because deep down they're really sad, but it's not safe to show tears, right? This is kind of a stereotype that we offer men. Sorry, guys, but it's like the guys have to be strong and they're okay. It's okay for them to be angry. They can't show their pain or weakness, which of course we all have, or grief. So instead it's like, ooh, anger. I'm going to be strong and armor myself. And there's a time and a place for that, I think, as opposed to the ladies tend to, again, this is a stereotype. It's not okay to be angry, but it's okay to cry and be weak and fragile. It's not okay to be strong and like gladiator-like. But then often we're both the same. We have equal needs of all of the emotions. We all have the ability to have these big, big life force energy, healthy aggression elements. Because of course we do. We all have a brain and a nervous system we have to protect. And then, of course, we all feel and we all grieve. And we all have empathy and attunement. And so it's like, how do we have this beautiful balance of all the visceral emotions, all of the protection elements, and then of course back to polyvagal, connection, social engagement, creativity, et cetera. All right. Still page four. So the first line here, the second line, the big line, the tricky, sticky nature of working, of anger and healthy aggression work. So this, it's tricky and it's sticky. Those are my words, very professional, very scientific. But it is tricky and it's sticky, right? Because, like I said on the first page, up until this point, unless we go into tribal culture, various cultures where there is still dance, drumming, chanting, connection, warriors, hunting, fighting, in ways that are around sport and protection. Like, it's tricky, it's sticky, especially in the West, to work with this. So be gentle with yourself. If you're like, why am I just not finding this aggression? Like, where is it? Right? We have millennia, if not tens of thousands of years of not seeing this in the way that we might want to see it. So, first bullet there. It can be tough to imagine a lifetime of stored up anger and aggression coming out in one big bang. So the word is a lifetime, lifetime. And it's tough to imagine it because I don't think that's possible. I don't think we can get every single ball and boulder that's in our swimming pool out of our system in one big moment. I do feel that when people do practices that are a bit too intense for their capacity, elements of that happen. And I've talked to many people who have maybe done deep meditation retreats. I've heard this more than once around plant medicine ceremonies, psychedelics, even some breath work can really spark up a release of stored stuff, but the system isn't ready for that release. It hasn't built up the foundations. It's like laying on the lumber on a building site before there's even any, before the foundation has settled. That lumber and the steel beams and the rebar, if I use the example of building a house, it's just going to crumble. It's just going to fall, right? And so I think some many people want to get this stuff out in one go, and I don't blame them. It's like, I want this stuff off my back. I don't want to deal with this anymore. Let's go and do this thing to help move all this, because this person is saying I can heal all my trauma in a weekend. No, you cannot. I can say that for sure. It's a nice idea, but it comes at some pretty big consequences if the physiology isn't ready for that. So just, be aware of that. Whether this is for yourself, people you know, if you work with people, the slow, steady building a foundation still is what we want. Next bullet, a person will stop. So a person will stop their aggressive impulses, and even just the feeling, that's the next word, the feeling of the anger energy, as if they feel, sense, or think, this is a long sentence, it might harm others. So I'll read this in another full go. Person will stop their aggressive impulses, and even just the feeling of the anger energy, as they feel, sense, think it might harm others. You see how that connects to the baby who isn't connected to when she wants to pull and tug on the hair? And again, this isn't my story. This is something I remember Peter saying in our lectures on healthy aggression. He said the mother will have this baby, the baby pulls on the hair. And the mother says, wow, this is a little monster. I'm just going to put it back in the crib and ignore it because I'm not here for someone to get to be mad at me or to hurt me. This is my baby, right? And again, no one's fault, everyone's fault. It's again this element of, wow, this is, I get why someone would feel that if they haven't worked on themselves. But again, it's just not, it's like, this isn't personal. This is a little biological human, a little animal. It's a little baby mammal that needs that connection. But again, if we were given that message that anger is not okay, a healthy aggression, life force, energy isn't okay, the moment we start to feel it, there'll be this little radar that says, danger. You were disconnected with when you showed this. Don't go there. But that's the wrong message. Yeah? It's the wrong message. And I've worked with so many people where I watch them start to get angry, and it's like a feeling I sense, like you could touch it in the room. I immediately go, okay, we don't need to go there yet. It's like that you, because you can't express healthy aggression or anger if there's any part in your body that's saying stop. You can't. It will not be authentic. And then it'll feel fake. And then you'll go into a spiral of, I did it wrong. I've seen this enough times. So if you just are like, not doing that, just like some people are like, when you start to work with their fascia and touch work, it's like, oh, that's too much. Cause there's so, can there, cause there'd be so much emotion and history stored in our tissues, in our skin, in our bones, especially our fascia. So again, for those of you who say are body workers, you work with people, you never want to force someone to get angry just for the sake of saying, oh, we got you to say fuck off, pardon my French, but not really, right? You can't force someone to express what they don't feel comfortable saying. And for those of you who are practitioners, this is where you got to get your healthy aggression game on, so that you can help others feel that safety. So this is another thing that they often don't tell you in therapy school, is you need to get your capacity on board so big, because when your capacity is so big, the client, the group, they sense, ah, this person's got me. So if I need to express anger or this or that, I know I can do that with this person. If your therapist gets a little stunned when you have you get a little expression of something in the office, that's not good, right? Just like when the baby tugs on the hair, oh, look at you, you're super strong. Let's play with that. Hope this is making sense. I'm throwing in lots of little vignettes here. So let's keep going. So it's kind of a bit of a run-on sentence here. So, and or a person might stop. So this is in the case of a person working with their healthy aggression. They might stop and not allow themselves to feel it because it was unsafe. That's the word. To express it in the past. Or, so unsafe is the word, or the expression of anger they knew from the family system was explosive, abusive, and terrifying. So I mentioned this at the beginning of the call, right? So there is this coupling dynamic, would be the fancy word. There's this connection of all anger bad, right? And so the moment a person starts to feel their natural impulses, they might be like, uh-oh, this isn't safe. I can't express this, because if I express myself when I was young, I got hit or I got yelled at. And this is scary. So that's valid. Even if you're 50 years old and your parents are deceased and you've created a great life for yourself and there's no real threat around you, and now you start to feel these bubblings of real healthy aggression and life force energy, and something in you is like, I am not safe. This isn't good. Why is this? It's that old stuff. And that's okay, right? That's okay. That's normal. That makes total sense. And that's where you go back to the basics. Where am I? Can I feel my butt? Can I sense my breath? Do I need to go for a walk? Where are my positive resources? Et cetera, et cetera. Next line. There's also immense shame. That's the word. Shame. Coupled with these powerful life force sensations and emotions. So there often is, not always, not everyone's going to have that. But again, if you expressed yourself when you were young at another time in life and you were punished, you were told stop that, you go into a bit of a collapse response, which is a response of shame. The spine curls, the tailbone tucks under. We're just like dogs, right? The tail goes under, we collapse, we bow our head down. If that occurred when we were young, that quality might be felt. And that's again why it's so important for us to work on our spine, know where our spine is, and go, oh, wow, I've just gone into this spinal collapse. My pelvis is tucked under, my head has dropped down. Oh, I'm gonna come into that sort of connecting the head and the pelvis lesson that Irene did, where I can feel that I can go in both directions. I don't need to be stuck in this space, right? And again, you find that length in your spine, and that can actually shift a lot of our physiology. Okay, final bullet on this page. Another commonality, having zero. Null, nil, no. So, no, zero model for any kind of life force expression, meaning the environment was devoid of all emotion, shut down, and any sign of warmth or affection was the rule. Those are the words. So, no sign of warmth or affection was the rule. This really connects again with that era post-World War II, where everyone was just kind of in survival mode and shock. So we just had to pretend like nothing happened, of course, celebrate, but not deal with the pain and the loss and the tragedy. Let's just keep going, right? There was even a the comment that saying, keep calm and carry on. That came from, I'm not good with my history. Someone might want to correct me. Or the you can do it. That woman with the bicep was very America, I think, back in the day, that, but it's like, let's just keep going. And then also with the Brits, keep the stiff British upper lip, right? That element. It's all real. It's like, don't complain, keep going. We're all still alive, so it can't be that bad, right? But under that is all that stuff that didn't get processed. So, final word of the day, or not the word of the day, page number four, hence titration. That's the final word on that page. All right, let's do a little extra here, lesson review. So, remember, have you still been feeling your bums on the chair? Just maybe tune in and see if there's anything that you're holding. Obviously, you might be holding your pen and your paper, but any muscle tension that is crept up as you hear and process this theory. Yeah, I just saw a comment from Lisa in the chat, or you got warmth and affection one moment and then the next explosive anger. Yes, exactly. So there's so many varieties of this, right? And oddly, that one can be just, if not more confusing than the others, because then you, this is where walking on eggshells comes from, right? I'm just going to tiptoe around and be perfect as a kiddo, because if I'm perfect, then I'm less likely to get screamed at. Right. And so again, it's just a shame that so many of us had to live through that. But again, when our parents have dysregulation, they don't know what it means to attune and provide safety and environment, this will come out, unfortunately. But the good news, we can heal it. That's why we're here. So, page five. So, just a bit of a lesson review of exploring healthy aggression. So, I'm going to go through this fairly quickly. All of this is stuff that I've said at some point you will learn in the lessons. And as always, all of this All these lines here and bullets are not everything, but they're some of the common ones that I see that come up when we're starting to express healthy aggression. The other one that can come up that isn't here is just getting like irritated. Like kind of this, like, oh, I'm just so irritated at things right now. What is that? That's on the spectrum of anger. It's just not as forceful, right? Tension in the body can be, not always, but can a sign that there's held aggression, held fight, held flight in the body. So with that said, first line there, anger is often associated with tension. That's the word, tension in the body and its muscles, musculature system, for the most part. We can also have tension in our body because we have an old injury, right? It doesn't have to always be from emotion. It can be lots of reasons. Next line. Sometimes we need to create is the word, safe, aggressive experiments. That's the word, experiments, to help free up stored anger and aggression. And that's exactly what you guys are doing in SBSM, the VU, the AAH, some of the articles that are part of the Anger and Aggression Labs. Seth wrote a book on being able to free up healthy aggression by squeezing towels. Some things that are really wonderful are these, we call them anger sticks. I think they're written in his article, but there's these they're called TheraBands. Oh, someone's got one right there. Thanks, someone. And you can like squeeze it, and it's like a fairly safe thing for the, you know, it's not like you're squeezing a metal pipe or anything like that. It's got some give to it. These ways that we can gnaw and squeeze our hands and get that movement out. These are all ways that we can move and mobilize that energy. But so is going for a walk. You know, if you can walk, a brisk walk, stomping your feet on the ground, running up some stairs and huffing and puffing a little bit. You know, anger, healthy aggression comes with energy, comes with the heart rate going up, comes with the breath rate going up, right? So the bands are called TheraBands. It's a brand, TheraBand. I think it's a US company. They come in different colors for different tightnesses. So, experiments for helping to free up this energy are, but are not limited to. So, I'll read these out. Accessing the jaw, so that's the first word, jaw and facial muscles. So, this again is where the VU and the VUA, next line down. Subtle entry points to unlock held aggressions. Peter Levine would often say the jaw is the linchpin to anger. Linchpin is just a fancy word for like the place to go. It's like an access point. It's the thing. It's like the jaw is connected to anger. But I will say, just because there's jaw tension or jaw pain does not necessarily mean it's held anger. It could be an old dental trauma. Right? It's just like saying someone has trouble with sexual arousal, must have had sexual trauma. No, that is not the case. So you have to be very careful that we don't say, oh, because of this, this is definitely why. There can be a lot of stuff that happens because of a tight jaw. But it's often one of the places. Doing the VUA, VU and the VUA with movements. That's the final word of the handout there. Movements. So the hands, the feet, the pelvis, the eyes. One thing that I teach in the VUA, you want to always have your eyes open. Because if Mama Bear is protecting her young, is she growling with her eyes closed? No. She's looking at the perpetrator, whether it's the fox or whatever animal is trying to get to her cubs. You got to have those eyes wide open, orienting. And so if the vu and the vua doesn't feel safe and you have to keep your eyes closed, what does that mean? You're maybe not ready yet for that expression, and that's okay. This is where we go back to the basics, the joints, the diaphragms, the more gentle but still important capacity building work. All right. And the reason I say hands, feet, again, if you are needing to protect yourself and you have freedom of your arms, you're going to push, you're going to hit, you're going to scratch, you're going to punch. So we want to connect that sound with these hands that I'm showing you, right? Our pelvis. So everyone feel where their pelvis is, right? We often say where our hips are, but it's our sit bones, the front of our pelvis, our pubic bone, the tailbone area. Again, when we're running, when we're fighting, we need the full spine to be in play. So this is why, again, it's not enough to just sit there and like, ah, scream. Like we have to bring the full body into it. And again, this is why the Feldenkraisian movements are so important, and Ilya's movements, the dance, getting the flow in the body. Again, this is where we start to see. I hope you see how inclusive this healing work is. You can't just work with the throat or the voice, or the whole body has to be in it, right? Eyes, pelvis. And then again, lowering down, the snarling of the lip is a fun one. Like, you bare your teeth, I'll do it. Who, like for some people, that's no problem. For others, they go into that movement and it's like, oh, I can't do that. That's good information. If that feels scary to do, that's a wonderful little piece of information. Go, ah, oh, wow, I think I got some stuff to work on capacity wise before I can feel comfortable baring my teeth, right? Growling, grr, hissing, hiss sounds. A lot of birds hiss. We're at a time right now in spring where the little baby goslings are going to start to be born. They're probably already starting to come out. If you've ever gone up to mother geese, they don't bite. Well, they do, but they do a hissing sound first. That's their way of saying, stay away from my cute little fuzzy babies, right? But you almost feel the poison come out of them. There's no poison, but the sound is like, you stay away, right? So hissing sounds, pushing with the hands, moving the arms, flailing the arms, stomping the feet. No, stop that. Saying stop. Movements to hit, punch, scratch. Sometimes you need something to hit against, and sometimes you just need to punch the air, right? But again, this is where, yeah, you might want to hit a pillow, but you want to hit that pillow with that internal organic impulse of, oh, I'm just so mad. And then boom, as opposed to, I know I've got some anger. Let's just hit a pillow. It needs to come from the whole body. One of the best devices, I think, if you want to have some tools around, pillows aren't the best because they're a little too soft. So if you have a meditation cushion, those zafus that people sit on that are round and they're really dense, those are the best for hitting. So because they're thick and they're soft, but you're not going to push through and hit your hand through to like the floor. They're wonderful for hitting. So a little hot tip there for getting healthy aggression out. Turn your meditation cushions into punching bags for when you might need to punch or hit. The other one that's great is ripping magazines. So, or if you have like old scrap paper that you don't need, tearing can also be a very satisfying thing to do because it's hands, you feel it, you're ripping something apart. Kids love that. If you have a bunch of old magazines or get some old magazines from like somewhere, old phone books that I don't think anybody uses anymore, but they still send them to you. Ripping apart phone books are good ways to get kids to get their aggression out also. All right. Thank you, everyone. Glad I had the right handout for today. Thanks for noticing my mistake, witnessing it. Yeah, these are some of, I think, I love getting into the anger and healthy aggression because we need all the other stuff before so that we can talk about this with capacity. So again, that's why we take this much time to get to these elements of working with healthy aggression. And then, of course, for those of you who are new this round, just know this just keeps layering. So if you're feeling like this is a little foggy and it doesn't make quite enough sense, don't worry about it. You're all biological mammals. This is in you. It is in you. And you just got to keep going at it slowly, trusting, keeping up with your basics, taking care of yourself, ask questions, and it eventually starts to bubble up in really healthy ways. Thank you, Leah and Ari, for being here on the call, supporting as needed. And there is another Q&A call coming up this Thursday with Seth. So he will see you there. Thanks, everyone. Bye for now. Bye.